Just wanted to remind you guys and gals about some fun stuff going on at Keeneland this fall meet. Don't forget about the Turf Pick 3. It's new for the fall meet. It's a $3 minimum wager and follows the same rules as a traditional pick. 3, 15% takeout. It will also appear as a separate event on wagering terminals and ADW's named the Keeneland Turf Pick 3. It will be the last three turf races on each individual card. And also, we have a special bonus for wagers on Keeneland. If you use Keeneland Select, new signups who wager $200 on the fall meet will receive $100 back into their account. Wager another $100 for a total of $300 in your first 30 days and receive another $100 back. So, in a nutshell, bet $300 on Keeneland Fall Meet as a new member. Get $200 back. The promo code is ITM21. Promo code again, ITM21. Welcome to episode 118 of Ripboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is someone who I had on when I was in single digits of this podcast. She is back. It is none other than Keeneland's own analyst, Gabby Gaudette. Me and Gabby go over three races from this past Saturday at Keeneland Racetrack, that being race 5, 6, and race 8. And some angles that we talk about are why it's always worth taking a shot against a horse that is favored on the wrong surface, and how good of a jockey-trainer tandem is Chad Brown and Flavian Pratt. This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story in this tugboat. We go back and forth, we go back and forth. It ain't good for me what we do this for. We go back and forth, won't do this no more. All we want, always have a tell it. 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 All we want. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's Redboard Rewind. I think she was last a guest when I was doing single digits way back when. It's Gabby Gaudette of the Keeneland Racing Analysis Program. How are you, Gabby?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am fantastic. Glad to have you back on. It's been far too long. How has it been so far, this meet at Keeneland?
I love Keeneland fall. It's honestly my favorite time of year. The leaves are turning. It's starting to feel like fall weather, and it's this year, not so much last year, but it's absolutely been packed every single day. So you really get that typical fall Keeneland energy, and it's just been so much fun to work there every day so far.
Everyone loves Keeneland in general, both, you know, in the spring and the fall as well. A lot of times in the spring, it's a lot of two-year-old racing. Do you kind of feel like when it gets into the fall, it's a lot more bread and butter? Obviously, two-year-olds are still there, but maybe they're not so much prominent as they are in the earlier meet.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, positives to each meet. In the spring, you're trying to dodge all the Wesley Ward two-year-olds that are going to pay like pennies. But in the fall, I do think that you get more bang for your buck. You can find more value in some of these races. You get a lot of horses that have been competitive, you know, over the course of the summer in graded stakes races that might be stepping into more graded stakes races. And then, of course, Fall Stars weekend, you get those horses that are trying to get their final preps for the Breeders' Cup. So, yeah, I love any day at Keeneland, but the fall, you really get to see these phenomenal horses that are just trying to, wrap up their year.
I'm glad you brought up Breeders' Cup. I know I didn't prep you for this, but we just heard Maxfield obviously skipping the Classic, going to go to the Clark. Just kind of quick thoughts on that.
You know, I saw that headline. I haven't read what Brendan, ultimately why that decision was made. I didn't read the article, but, I think that's contributed to the longevity of this horse and them kind of finding the right spots for him, each and every step along the way. I think he's good enough to be competitive in the Classic. I think he's probably good enough to hit the board in the Classic, but they've just picked out the best spots for him because they're kind of thinking about the future. I mean, this is a horse that can win grade ones down the road still. So I don't know if there was any other reason why they decided to skip it, but that's always been my take on how this horse has been managed, and that's why he's still around.
I love the fact that you bring up the management too, because obviously he wasn't able to make it as a two-year-old in the juvenile. And I just feel like everyone expects this horse to be that top horse that, you know, should be, you know, some people had him favored as, you know, the best horse in as the older division. And I always, not that he's a step below, but I think hitting the board in the classics is exactly where I have him. He could finish a really nice third, but when to get over that hump, he didn't run too well on the West Coast already this year. And I do agree. I think the management of a horse, and listen, people complain all the time. They say, oh, you know, Gunrunner back in the day when he went to both Saratoga races, he was pennies on the dollar. And it's like, it's a place he could win. The trainers are not paid to find the best spot where we can have 10 4-to-1 shots line up in the gate. They're paid to win the races and spot the horses properly.
Exactly. And that's honestly, it seems like a pretty deep, decent classic division this year. Mm-hmm. And I think that Maxfield, like I said, would certainly hit the board, but they're just trying to accumulate these grade ones for him. And that would be a tougher spot. I have a lot of respect for people that kind of, you know, put the horse first and kind of think about the future. Obviously we'd love to see them at the Breeders' Cup, but they have, I think, always had a different approach with this horse from the get-go.
Before we jump into these races, just any quick trends or anything that you've noticed so far? Obviously the Keeneland meets are so short, so you have to jump on the trends now or jump off certain trends pretty quickly.
It has changed every single day. I feel like it's definitely changed from the first week to the second week. The first week, the turf course was playing completely differently. You wanted to be on the front end. Horses weren't closing at all. And then the second week, it was completely different. You couldn't be on the front end. Horses were closing. The main track, there were a couple of days where the rails seemed to be really good too. It seemed like horses kind of got that second wind on the dirt. Other than that, I feel like you can't really be a deep closer and be successful, but you can still sit from off the pace or be on the lead. But that's kind of always how I think Keeneland's main track has been, especially at the first wire finish. You know, speed has always been a little bit dangerous on their main track. Of course you do get closers, but for majority speaking, you know, you want to be tactical. So those are just some trends. Who knows what week three will have in store, because it's been very different the first 2 weeks. And obviously that depends on the weather too. We, you know, did experience a lot of rain the second week, not so much the first.
I think so as well. And that's for people who, you know, the beginning player or the person who's maybe is the weekend warrior. Just take 10 minutes a day and just go through the charts. I know it doesn't sound like a lot, and it does help out, though. If that first week, you know, when those horses come back, whether they come back at Keeneland or wherever, and you know that the bias was a certain way, and that horse goes off, you know, 8-10-1, you know the bias is not existing at the racetrack they end up at, this is where you can find those nice, juicy win payouts for sure.
Oh, it definitely pays to pay attention to the track trends. And, you know, sometimes you can get ahead of the curve and sometimes, you know, people beat you to the punch, but anything that you can do to, you know, have a little bit of an edge, is definitely helpful.
Let's move on to the first race of this podcast, race number 5 from Keeneland. It was an open 50,000 claimer, 1/116 miles on the dirt. What'd you like in this race, Gabby?
Who did I like in that race?
Yeah.
Not the winner, which happened to be my husband's horse. No offense. but no, I actually did pick American Tattoo in the race. He unfortunately did not get a very good trip, though. He was just wide throughout. And we had kind of thought that it would be a fast pace and that would be a little bit of a concern. I did not really like the winner at all. I thought that horse didn't want to go 2 turns, but boy, was I wrong.
I think overall, when you look at these tough races too, the 50,000 especially, and just the higher level claimers in general, a lot of times you will see the, you know, the horse's trial allowance company, maybe they're just not good enough for it, and they end up just being those strong 40 to 50,000 claimers. And a lot of times it's difficult for certain outfits to jump in and, you know, put 50K down on a horse when, you know, if they think that's the top it can be and they can't be that allowance horse, that listed stake horse, or they really have to find that good form. I think that overall, when you look at certain horses in this race, and for me, Hotshot Kid was one I definitely wanted to use coming out of that state bred stake race at Canterbury. I just thought this one was kind of going in the right direction. And not only that, 15 wins and 40 tries. This one just reminded me so much of that hard knocking claimer. 2 seconds at Keeneland out of 3 starts isn't that bad. four wins and seven tries at the distance with 2 seconds. I just distance specialists sometimes, and there were some horses that had just as good numbers, but I, for some reason, this one kind of just drew to me. One other one that I had also liked, Fighting CB, which ended up going off as the favorite for Ken McPeak. Obviously, the back-to-back 90 buyers look really good. Closing into a slow pace, two back in the lure, and then going into the optional. I just wonder if, you know, they were just now trying to find the right level for this one. And I think we can talk about this also after the race. When you like two horses in a race, and one's 14-1 and the other one is the favorite, and everyone starts to overthink themselves. And they go, oh, I just play the favorite. You know, you're probably right. And a lot of times it's dead. They leave money on there because they only have to be right 1 in 10 times for, you know, having Hot Shot Kid compared to, you know, Fighting CB. You have to be right, you know, five out of 10 times almost.
Right. And you don't have to sell me on Fighting CB. I have picked this. He's run 16 times. I think I've picked him at least 11 times. I love this horse. And I thought, you know, he was definitely worth the 50,000. You know, Kenny McPeak, he sends horses to Florida during the winter, but it's not uncommon to see horsemen who, you know, obviously this was a dirt race, but the majority of his races are on the turf. And a lot of the time, you know, if we see outfits that stable at Oaklawn or elsewhere during the winter, sometimes this is a time of year that they start to get rid of, you know, some of their turf horses. So I was curious about the move here with Fighting CB, but I just think he's a better turf horse and he's got a lot of class. I did like him originally in my top three, but I did go to American Tattoo. The reason why I did pick American Tattoo was because I liked him shortening up in distance. And that was a very tough allowance race that he was coming out of. You mentioned the two other than allowance races. They went so fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, how often do you see 23 and change, 46 and three for the opening quarter and half going a mile and a quarter? And he was just kind of chasing the whole way. So I really thought that that would set him up nicely for cutting back in distance, coming back down to a reasonable level, but he just wasn't good enough. And I also don't think the pace scenario helped him and the wide trip. So yeah, I was not right about this race, but in hindsight, some of the points that you make about Hot Shot Kid, he should have been, you know, one of the top contenders just because of his class, a 15-time winner.
It's Hot Shot Kid for me. It's American Tattoo for Gabby. Let's see who can get down in this 50,000 claimer right now.
And there goes Palace Coup, right out running for the early lead. American Tattoo has some early speed as well. There's Pioneer Spirit, who is moving up into the second position into the first turn. And then comes Hadley's Houdini. American Tattoo is fourth, now taking third out in the center of the track around the first turn, three lanes off the rail now. Further back, Hotshot Kid hugs the rail in the fifth position around the turn. Fighting CB is down toward the inside in sixth. Lord Dragon is seventh, gigging last of the eight. 24.07 seconds the time for the opening quarter. Palace Coup leads. Palace Coup on top by a length. On to the back stretch. Here's Pioneer Spirit between horses now, drawing alongside the leader, and American Tattoo is third up to the far outside, a length off the lead. Hotshot Kid is between horses there in fourth, as Fighting CB moves up a closer fifth to his inside. Hadley's Houdini is sixth on the far outside, gigging, and Lord Dragon at the back. 48.31 seconds for the opening half mile. Six lengths front to back. Onto the far turn they go. Lord Dragon trying to improve position for the back. Going to be wide to the far turn. Has to go to the center of the track. Still five lengths from the lead. Palace Coup is the leader by three quarters of a length. Pioneer Spirit second. American Tattoo far outside is in third. And Fighting CB looks for running room toward the inside. Fourth to third. Now taking second ahead at the quarter pole. Length and a half off the lead of Palace Coup. Lord Dragon going to have to go wider still at the top of the stretch and is still eight lengths from the lead. Palace Coup leads it. Fighting CB swings to the outside now from the second position. Hadley's Houdini is there in third. Late runs from Gigging and then Lord Dragon, who's on the far outside, but it's the short stretch. Fighting CB, and here's Hotshot Kid. Hotshot Kid coming up the inside. Fighting CB from the outside down to the line. Hotshot Kid. Francisco Arrieta for the upset.
And Hotshot Kid does get it done, paying a very nice $30, even $76 on the buyer. So obviously the buyer is supposed to be a $90 for the buyer par. This is a $76, so obviously a weaker 50,000 claimer. I just think overall, you know, sometimes, and I'll go back to it, you know, when I have two contenders and one's 14 to 1, that's how you'll end up making money in this game, is because you'll only have to be right 1 out of 10 times. And going also back to fighting CB, I know you brought it up and I didn't, how this one was mostly a turf horse. It's hard when a turf horse gets bet so much into the teeth and ends up being the favorite. I mean, is the public correct, or are you just thinking about it incorrectly with these distance and surface changes? I think overall, a lot of the times when you see a horse switching surfaces, maybe and doing it for the first time or second time, probably one to fade in the future.
Yes. So I think it applies, that lesson applies with this particular horse and fighting CB. And also, I really think it applies in off the turf races. I know that's not necessarily what's going on in this race, but that's where I find you find the most value, because people bet turf horses, yeah, and off the dirt race or off the turf races. And I just see, you know, horses that should be 3 to 1, you get 6 to 1 on. You're literally doubling your odds. So yeah, that's definitely food for thought, especially with the results from this race.
Quick thoughts on American Tattoo, obviously off the board, just maybe wrong trip or anything?
Yeah, you know, maybe his last race took a lot out of him. Wide trip, forwardly placed. I mean, he wants to be on the lead. I don't know. He's definitely a better horse than what he showed in this particular event. So we'll see when he comes back and kind of go from there. But yeah, definitely disappointing.
Let's move on to race number 6, maiden special weight. 84,000 is the purse, 101/16 miles on the turf course. How about in this race, Gabby?
Okay, so my top pick in here, I went with a crazy horse. The 10 Faith Runner. I actually don't know the morning line. I handicapped well in advance of the morning line. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I took a shot with this horse was because he was really green in his first race. He came back, he improved, and he ran against Annapolis, who went on to win the Grade 2 Pilgrim. Now, Curbstone, the 4 in this race, he's going to be a much shorter price. He ran in the same race. He was 8th. And Faith Runner was 6th. And I thought that he actually just had a better performance. He was more into the race. So maybe this horse woke up last time out. That was where I went. It was, you know, irrespective of turf or dirt, as this race did come off the turf and just run on the main track.
I think that's so difficult. Well, like we just talked about, a lot of times people handicap so early in advance and they're like, okay, turf race. And, you know, they put their bets in and they go to work that day and they're like, wow, you know, whatever, my horse finished dead last. And they look through the result charts and it's like, it ran on dirt. And I think that's the hardest part for me. Like, I really wanted Bickle. That was the one, and it comes down to it. I just really felt strongly, even as a single. And when this one scratches out, now you have to also, your top opinion scratches. Now you're worried about, you know, the surface switch as well. Wicked Genius for me. Wicked Strong has done all right as a sire so far. I thought the last race out, albeit it was on the turf, I thought the last couple tries on dirt were okay. I thought this one was going to end up being a B for me, and Maltese ended up being my top pick. It wasn't anything, you know, spicy or sexy. I just, the rest of the field with everything coming off, I wanted to find a horse with decent form. And with Faith Runner, for what you said, speed and fade second time out against the next out winner, with it being on turf, I understand the 0 is kind of, you know, hard to swallow. And, but I mean, like you said, if they're green and you're not watching replays and all you look at is a buyer figure, you only know half the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the blinkers went on him in a second start. So maybe he's just a horse that kind of needed that experience. And it wasn't necessarily, you know, first time out that he didn't like the dirt. It might've been a combination of factors, that he was green, that he didn't, that he needed blinkers and also needed more distance.
Me and Gabby are going for 2 outside horses. She is on the number 10 Faith Runner. I'm on Wicked Genius. Let's see who can break their maiden right now.
There goes Camp David right out for the early lead. Tonkawa Springs to the inside and Curbstone between that pair. Camp David has the early lead, but only by a neck. There's Curbstone moving up. Curbstone moves up, gets over next to the rail and has the lead now a half length. Camp David goes second. Tonkawa Springs is third and tucked away neatly toward the inside. Faith Runner is fourth in between horses. And there goes Wicked Genius, a 3-wide move from 5th to 4th, the challenge for 3rd now around the first turn. Further back, Travel Guide is 6th toward the inside. Freedom's Way moves up one spot out from seventh outside of that one. And then a gap of six more lengths back to Big Woo and nearly five back of that one. Hashtag No Wonder is last. 23.69 seconds the time for the opening quarter. Curbstone the leader. Curbstone is on top by a length and a half. Up the backstretch, Camp David second by a length and a half. And then Tonkawa Springs to the inside. Wicked Genius is there on the far outside as they go at it for the third spot, joined by Faith Runner, who's in between that pair, 47.17 seconds for the first half mile. To the far turn they go. Curbstone leading Camp David only by three quarters of a length, and Camp David starts to edge forward toward the outside to apply more pressure to the leader. Gap of five lengths, Wicked Genius third. Four back of that when Tonkawa Springs is in fourth, and then Travel Guide fifth up on the outside. But the lead duo is at the quarter pole, and here's Camp David right alongside of Curbstone. Camp David and Curbstone go at it for the lead to the top of the short stretch. They've opened up by eight lengths to Wicked Genius in third. Another eight lengths back to Travel Guide in fourth. Tonkawa Springs fifth. Camp David leads coming to the eighth pole. Camp David by a length and a half. Curbstone is second to the inside. Gap of five more to Wicked Genius in third. It is Camp David in front for Jose Ortiz. Curbstone second. Camp David moves on for the finish, and Camp David to win it.
And number nine, Camp David got it done. 12-20, the winning mutual. 71, the winning buyer. We went too far outside in this race. We had to go just one shorter for you for the number nine, Camp David. Jose Ortiz, the winning rider. Rudolph Brissett, the winning trainer. Just a horse that I thought did have back-to-back dirt starts. And I guess sometimes when the horse is meant for dirt and obviously and scratches off the turf race, you know, maybe this one they just left in knowing they had the back dirt form.
I would have definitely used this horse now that it, you know, came off of the turf and whatever multi-race sequences, say the pick three or the pick five, just because he did have that proven dirt form his first race. You know, if he would improve off of that a little bit, that would probably be good enough to win here. But a lot of the time, you know, I wasn't crazy about him going into the race, I'll be honest, because I don't like it when 2-year-olds specifically don't improve in their second start. I like to see some sort of improvement that you can work off of. And I didn't see that with him in terms of his buyer or his performance in general. But Camp David, he was fit and he was the best dirt horse on the day.
I think so too. Just when you look at the PPs, and it's only two races, but ran fine at Indiana. We all know, you know, for Churchill, some horses like it, some horses don't. That's why when the Derby's ran there and horses run dead last and people can't figure it out, sometimes it ends up just being the track. I think so, too. I think that the Jose Ortiz rider change was good. And also, Rudolph Brissett's one of those few trainers that I think stretching out has some of the best numbers in the game. And that's a trend, or just trainer stat in general, that I think a lot of people don't look into enough.
Oh, for sure. Because he does, I think, take his time with his horses. You know, he comes from the school of Belmont, where you don't really put a lot of pressure on these horses to win first time out. So you know that they're set up for success once they finally get to the two turns.
Out of the horses that ran, is there a specific horse that you're looking forward to seeing get back on the grass?
You know, I hate to say it, I don't think this is really the toughest race. Even in hindsight, going in, I didn't think it was the toughest race. That's why I didn't want to go with the favorite in Curbstone. So I guess a little bit. There was actually a horse in there. Tonkawa Springs has an interesting turf pedigree. Maybe that horse can turn things around on the turf. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think even the horses running out of this race, or they're going to produce fast figures moving forward.
Let's move on to the last race of this podcast. Race number 8 from Keeneland. It was the Queen Elizabeth, or the QE2, going 1 1/8 miles on the turf. A couple Chads in here. What'd you like in this one, Gabby?
I picked Empress Josephine, but with an asterisk next to her, because I think Shanti Sara is one of the up-and-comers in this division for Chad Brown. And especially that the way that the turf came up, the turf conditions, it was a little bit softer. I thought Shanti Sara, you know, she has that trajectory of a really nice Chad Brown filly. Empress Josephine, actually Aidan O'Brien, is filly wheeled back around in 7 days. And Aiden does this in Europe. He's also done it successfully in the States. He actually did this successfully with Together, a filly that ran. She won the First Lady, I believe. And then, no, she hit the board in the First Lady, and then she came back to win the QE2 7 days later. So I didn't think this was unprecedented. And if you look at her European form, she kind of stands out. She's, I think, one of the only Group 1 winners in here.
I think overall, and I talked about this with Scotty McKeever on the In the Money Players podcast, Shantisara, Chad Brown, and Flavian Pratt, probably top three in, you know, trainer and jockey. They're 39% with a positive ROI. I'd like for someone out there, if they have the time or if you want to, tell me out of the top five jockeys and trainers by whatever stat you can figure out, who has a positive ROI? Because I doubt it's many of them. The fact that these guys are almost at a $3 ROI, and not only that, but off the couple races overseas and they bring this one over, has improved every time. They had Nick Juarez on him for the race at Monmouth. Then Pratt gets on, a win and a win. He's back on for this one. Listen, I have a friend, and I told this to Scotty, if there's multiple Chads, they play them all, or they fade them all. They don't, you know, try and get cute and play one over the other, because we've seen it a la Saratoga, where, you know, the longest shot wins and they're out the pick five. Shantisara, for me, was one. Empress Josephine, the fact that they had the win, or the third and the First Lady last time out at 11-1. I'm still anti-Aiden O'Brien. I understand what he did last year with the try in the Breeders' Cup and all that. His numbers are still not good in North America. This is one that I had to use defensively as a B, and I hate using horses defensively as Bs. On the outside, closing remarks, Umberto Rispoli for Carla Gaines. This is the one that I thought was closest to Shantisara. I just like how Umberto rides the turf course. This one, another one slowly improving, and has a couple 90, low 90 buyers in there that, you know, could make it a little bit interesting in this spot.
Yeah, just to take it back to Shantisara, she is one, I love watching replays, and she is one that I think has really improved from a mental standpoint and figured things out stateside with each and every start, because in that stake race at Monmouth, she kind of broke tardily. It was a little bit of an awkward trip. Then she came back in the Pucker Up, and she broke so fast that day, but Flavian had it in him that he was like, nope, we're not going to the lead, we're going to take back. And she actually fought him going into the first turn. She threw her head up in the air. She just looked like she was resenting him. And then she comes with this explosive turn of foot. But then everything came together in the Jockey Club in Oaks Invitational at Belmont, where it was kind of a slower pace, the longer distance. She rated nicely. She settled. And she was dead game. So we've seen three completely different performances from her in North America. And I think it's all really led to her now figuring it out and being able to really tap into her true talent.
So it was Empress Josephine, which was your top pick?
Yes, it was.
Empress Josephine for Gabby, Shantisara for me. Let's see who can get this grade one QE2 right now.
Off in the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup presented by Dixiana. There's Burning Ambition outrunning for the lead down toward the inside. Technical Analysis, Empress Josephine also up close in the opening strides. Burning Ambition, though, has the advantage. Here's Technical Analysis moving forward now to take the lead as they head to the first turn. Empress Josephine third. Shantisara is in fourth. Queen Goddess fifth against the rail. Cloudy Dawn sixth on her outside. Nicest is seventh. Closing Remarks is back in the eighth position. Flippant last of the nine, but right there with the rest around the first turn, the opening quarter, 23.91 seconds. Technical Analysis against the rail leads at three quarters of a length. Empress Josephine goes second to the outside. Then a gap of two more lengths back to Burning Ambition in third. Shantisara now moves up to challenge for that third position from the outside. Two more lengths to Queen Goddess, Cloudy Dawn, Nicest, Closing Remarks, and Flippant, who trails at the midpoint of the backstretch, 48.63 seconds the time for the first half mile. Technical Analysis is the leader for Jose Ortiz to the far turn by three quarters of a length. Empress Josephine is second on the outside by two lengths. Shantisara and then Burning Ambition, who moves up once again third to the inside, two lengths off the lead. Queen Goddess is in the fifth position. Cloudy Dawn is in sixth. Midway on the final turn, Technical Analysis the leader by a length. Empress Josephine asks for more. She's second on the outside. Burning Ambition still third against the rail. Quarter mile to go. Shantisara is fourth up on the outside. Queen Goddess and then Flippin' serpent in the center of the course. Technical Analysis with Shanta Zara now taking the lead, moving by the eighth pole. Burning Ambition third, Nicest running late toward fourth, toward the inside, but Shanta Zara is moving on for the finish. A widening four-length lead to Technical Analysis in second. Down to the wire, Shanta Zara, Flavian Pratt to win the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup presented by Dixieanna.
And the number three, Shanti Sara gets it done. $7 winning mutual, $99 the winning fire. I mean, coming down the stretch, I mean, I looked up at the eighth pole and I looked back down. And this one was three or four in front.
This was a huge performance. I still get kind of goosebumps watching it back. But a couple of things. When I was on site watching this race and watching the fillies warm up, I would have put my savings account on her because of just how she looked, how she was acting. She really stood out from the rest of the group that she was going against in terms of her class and presence. And like I said, she just continues to improve. Now, I will say with Empress Josephine, I think a couple of things led to her demise. Maybe she was just too keen coming back off of such short rest. Sometimes we see that happen with horses. It's kind of, you would think the opposite would happen, that they're tired, they might be a little bit more lethargic, but sometimes they get a little bit too over the top when they come back off short rest. I think that did it, and also the addition of blinkers, because when you watch the replay, Johnny Velazquez, he was not able to get her to settle in the first part of the race. And when you're stretching out from a mile to a mile and an eighth, you need to get this filly covered up. You need to get her to shut off in the first part. And he was not able to do that. She just didn't have anything left in the second part of the race. So if you're wondering what happened to the favorite, I think that's my excuse for her. But at the end of the day, even if she did have a better trip, I don't think she was going to beat Shanti Zara.
Closing remarks goes off at 19-1, finishes off the board. That was kind of, you know, the wise guy pick for me. And then I had another one that I was kind of fading completely, that being Technical Analysis from the two-hole. I just thought the last two races at Togo were just so improved. And obviously three-year-olds can improve night and day, we know, over a few weeks. I just thought that maybe this one liked Saratoga a lot more than most, and I was willing to take a price against. This one runs second, and you know, everyone's so worried, you know, about picking Chad in first. He actually runs first and second again. The Chad Brown Exacta pays $11 for a buck, but I mean, $11 for, you know, Chalk Chalk is nothing to scoff at.
Yeah, Chad has been on a phenomenal roll over the last couple of weekends in graded stakes races on the turf, so he continues it going. And we'll see how that sets them up for the Breeders' Cup.
What are you looking forward to now that we have these races completed for the rest of the part at Keeneland and just in the future?
Just kind of looking forward to the remaining, couple of weeks. I think each and every card at Keeneland, they're fun races. And the All Turf Pick 3 has been actually pretty popular. It was a new wager this year, $3 minimum, 15% takeout. And I think, you know, a lot of people didn't know what to expect going into it, but it seems like it's been well received. So that's kind of curious to see that ride out throughout the end of the meet. And they also, Keeneland, sometimes the end of the meet can fall a little bit flat because, you're getting close to Breeders' Cup. The first two weekends were phenomenal with all these graded stakes races, but they actually added some stakes races towards the end of the meet. So just to kind of keep that momentum throughout the entirety of the meet. So those are some of the things that I'm looking forward to.
And for people who don't know about that All Turf Pick 3, it's the last three turf races every day. Like you said, $3 minimum, 15% takeout. I love seeing racing trying new things out, because you know what? Some of it's not going to work. The roulette bet did not work for everyone, you know, and I think a lot of people knew that. They were trying to base it on beginner stuff and just the pools were never there. This one I think is going to do really well. I love the fact that it's lower takeout, and you know, maybe I'm not saying we need to do one for dirt, but it would be interesting, you know, maybe picking, you know, you can do it any way you want. If someone's really good at maidens, you know, hopefully maybe they'll do a maiden pick three. I think there's definitely a bunch of different wagers, you know, that we can start, you know, utilizing and, you know, experimenting with for sure.
It's an excellent concept. And like you said, it's got legs that I think you can work off of and try to get creative, whether it be maiden races or allowance races or certain claiming races, whatever it may be, filly races, who knows. But I think the important part of it is the higher minimum and the lower takeout that has been so attractive to bettors.
That is all the time we have for today's podcast. I want to thank my special guest, Gabby Gaudette, for coming back on the show. I'll make sure it's not this long again before I have you come back on.
Anytime. I'm happy to talk racing any day of the week.
Thank you so much. I want to thank all the wonderful listeners and my special guest, Gabby Gaudette, for coming on to this latest show of Red Bull Rewind. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Pierre Thomas Forentail. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl, and we will see you next time.